The meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Development, and Housing Policy Committee will now come to order. We do have a quorum present, and want to take this opportunity to welcome everyone here and also to welcome two commissioners who will be working with this committee. And first, we're going to turn to Commissioner Tom Peterson from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I know that Commissioner Peterson is a familiar face to many of you, but we've asked him to come in just to share some information with us, what he views for his department coming up here in the future and with a new administration. And at this point, we want to welcome you here, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I am honored to be here today as now the Commissioner of Agriculture, and look forward to a future confirmation hearing. And I am trying to get around to meeting with all of you and any information that I can provide on my background and everything as we go forward in the confirmation period. I look forward to doing that. And I appreciate this opportunity that Governor Walz has given me. I thought long and hard about taking this step. Frankly, I enjoyed my work at Farmers Union, and it was very comfortable to me, and it was something that I it was hard to decide to do that and take that step, but I did see it as an opportunity and something I could move forward. Again, I am fairly familiar with all the members of the committee. I look around, and I think I've worked on legislation with every member or issues with every member of this committee and throughout the Senate. I'd like to just take a moment to introduce our Deputy Commissioner Andrea Vauble and Susan Stokes, our Assistant Commissioner, and our other assistant, Whitney Place, is not here yet. And we did have a new legislative liaison, Peter Kesjeth, who has just started last week. And so look forward to working with all of them. Real quick, I want to just share a little bit about my background. Some of you know me as having worked with Farmers Union for 16 years. I did not grow up on a farm. I grew up working on farms, my grandparents and my uncles, and I got involved in 4-H at a really young age. And I was honored to, with Senator Dames, to be at the county fairs this weekend, and 4-H really transformed me into maybe leading me into a road of riding horses, and really enjoying that, and took me into being active and in showing horses, which did lead to my parents buying a farm when I was a young man, and then led to my own business of getting into the horse business, which I was in for many years. And along the way, to support my horse business, I did other farm activities. So I raised cattle, goats, crops, all the above. While I was doing that, I also became active in Farmers Union. I can remember the day somebody stopped at my farm to sign me up for Farmers Union, and frankly, I didn't have the $30 to join Farmers Union at that point. It was tough, you know, and so I've lived through those days on my farm where I wasn't sure how I was going to feed my animals or put gas in my truck. That led to, so the person paid my dues that first year with the promise that I put $3 a month away, and then next year when he came back, I would have the money to join, to pay the second year. And then I became active in the organization and kept working on my farm. Along the way, I always worked other jobs, sometimes two or three jobs, to also during the night to pay my help with the farming issues, provide health care, a lot of the same issues that happened today. And I was glad to join Farmers Union 16 years ago. I was happy that Doug Peterson took an opportunity on me to give me that job, and I've enjoyed working there for 16 years. And I really think that working at a general farm organization, and I've talked with both Gary and Kevin Papp about this, it prepares me for being in this job. I know farmers in all 87 counties, from Cook County to Rock County to, you know, from the southeast to Senator Eakin's district. I know farmers of all types and sizes and different activities, and I think that prepares me for what Governor Walz says, One Minnesota. in looking at how we operate in that space. I know the agency pretty well. You know, they would always joke when I would go to the front door for years, the gal that works there, she'd say, "Do you work here or does she?" You know, because there's some days I'd be over there 2-3 days a week. The agency for myself, I know, as I've gotten into it, I know half the workers there, and I've known them for some of them for all 17 years I've been there. I understand the budget that the department has. I've worked on the budget, and as I've gotten in and looked at a lot of the things, our issues or incentives or ideas that I worked on over the years. In my time with Farmers Union, too, I also decided to become more active on boards. So I did serve until recently as the president of the Farmers Legal Action Group Board, which I thought was very important. And I got on that due to bankruptcies and energy issues. So it was at that time, years ago, we were working on a lot of farmers having transmission lines, things of that nature, and I thought that that was helpful. I joined the board of the Minnesota State Fair Plan. I don't know if anybody knows what that is. I know Senator Dames does, as being an insurance agent that provides low-income people that can't get housing insurance on their house a chance to get insurance. And I had that happen to me when I bought my first farm through State Farm. I found out that they wouldn't insure my farm. And I thought, well, then what do you do? Because then my mortgage company was like saying, you know, you got to have insurance. And so they said, we got to join the FAIR plan. So I joined the FAIR plan, and then the FAIR plan kicked me off because I had livestock. And I always thought this was messed up. And so when Governor Dayton became governor, I asked to be on the board, or I put my name in, and I was appointed to the board. And I, too, to this day, have been the only person on that board in 30 years who was actually on the plan. And so I thought it was interesting, but I had that unique perspective of why this happens. And so I thought that was important. I've also served on the board of the Minnesota Ag in the Classroom and the University of Minnesota Extension Citizens Advisory Committee. Real quick on some of our priorities and challenges, the farm economy, no doubt, is the number one challenge for us right now with 4 or 5 years of low prices going across the board, whether it's crops or livestock. It's been definitely challenging. A lot of farmers have eaten their equity. I get calls every day from farmers who are facing tough decisions, especially this time of the year. So as we look at that, that's in our mission at the Department of Agriculture to work to improve the lives of farmers. And so how we do that, we'll be looking at trade being a key issue, obviously, with China has brought a lot of pieces to that. We have a program and a person at the Department of Agriculture, really wonderful opportunities, and it's good to visit with him to see where our opportunities are. Value added has always been a top priority for myself, and it has been for Governor Walz. You know, in Governor Walz, too, we are getting somebody who has served 12 years on the House Ag Committee. So he's very familiar with the issues. When we talk, he's very understandable about that. Dairy is another issue that when I had my interview with Governor Walz, I brought up as a concern. When I started with Farmers Union, we had almost 11,000 dairy farms in 2002. Now we're at about 2,700. And I kept a chart in my office, and every year I'd update that chart. And it always was out of the corner of my eye, you know, on my desk. And I take that to heart and see that I think still that's a fight worth fighting, and we want to do everything we can. The new farm bill has some important pieces to that. Farm stress is another piece that we've all talked about in this committee. Several of you have had bills about that. I would like to see us do something early in session to help our farm mental health. You've all heard about having one person, Ted Matthews, who, by the way, is 71 years old and frankly needs some help. And our farm advocate program, it just very hard discussions I've had with farmers last month that really, I really take to heart. And I think that we owe it to the farmers to have those resources out there. A couple other quick issues, hemp. It's kind of an interesting issue right now. Senator Herr was at the department last Friday. We started a pilot project, was the issue I worked on for many years. Senator Eakin was the chief author. We had the bill to have a pilot project for, I think it was 14 years before we finally passed something when the 2014 bill opened it up. You know, Governor Pawlenty, Governor Dayton, they would always balk at hemp. You know, we would pass it bipartisan, and we could never move forward on it. But in 2014-15, we were able to. We started with a pilot project. We had 7 farmers that first year. The next year, I think we had about 30. Last year, we had almost 40. This year, we have 120 applications right now, and it's only January 22nd. So we're going to have a lot of people, because the farm bill that just passed at the end of the year basically opened it up now for everybody. But we're going to be competing against other states, especially North Dakota and Wisconsin. We want farmers to grow it here. We know they can grow it here, but we're going to have processing and look at how we can keep that here and how we can harness all that energy. So we had an industrial hemp forum at the department last Friday. It was my first little freak-out moment I had at the department, to be honest. We had expected maybe 100, maybe 150 people, and I went to the fruit and vegetable growers show that morning in St. Cloud, and I saw a tweet that we had 300 people at the department, and then they told us, no, it was closer to 400. We had to open more rooms. We had to fill our atrium, and I was nervous because I was going to get back at 11 o'clock, and I thought, oh, my goodness, are these people going to be mad? Are they going to be... You know, but I really give kudos to the staff, and I've learned that at the department in my short time there, that we do have wonderful staff there, and they were able to accommodate. But what I saw when I got there was just enthusiasm, people wanting to learn, wanting to connect with each other. There was, I was just frankly very excited to see that. But it is also going to give us some challenges. I also want to mention meat processing is something that we're looking at. I hear a lot about meat processing and our wait times that our producers have. We have a lot of opportunities in our minority population, namely our Somali, looking at like halal processing and things like that are going to be very, they're opportunities for our state. But we are things that we can improve upon and move forward with. And then finally, one thing that we're looking at is our shutdown. The federal shutdown and the impacts we have, about 11% of our budget comes from federal funds. Our first thing that we're looking at is meat processing. I think 50% of our inspections come from the federal government. And then we'll look at around March as being challenging. And so we're working with the state MMB and paying attention to that. But that's something as your committee looks at. And then later in the month, our other big piece we'd be looking at is gypsy moth control, and something I'm learning more about as we get into this. So I appreciate the opportunity. I also want to leave because I think that on the committee, you've had some discussions about our relationships with other agencies over the years, and a lot of the big issues that have come up a lot of times intersect state agencies. And I like what Governor Dayton says, or Governor Walz says, is that this is a chance to reset some of those things, whether it's buffers and nitrogen rule and ditch mowing and all the different things that we come up, is that relationships are really important to me, and that goes for relationships between the state agencies. And I think that I've, as I've gotten into this, the best thing that I like is that I've been able to spend a lot of time with Commissioner Bishop and Commissioner Stroman. We rode to our press conference together in a car our first time, and I value that, and I look forward to moving forward with that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. At this point, are there any questions on the part of the committee members? Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Peterson, congratulations on your appointment. I think that with your experience that you've had with Farmers Union the last 16 years, certainly brings a lot of qualified experience on your part to the job. So I wish you well. I do have a question. I'm sure after 16 years of being a legislative advisor to Farmers Union and dealing with the Department of Ag, which you probably did quite frequently, there's probably times when you kind of shook your head and say, how did that happen? Or why is this happening? Why are they doing it that way? My question would be, Have you had a chance to really think about some areas to where the culture maybe needs to be changed in order to get up to the day's speed on the changes in agriculture and the way things have went, especially when it comes to permitting and things like that? Just curious where you might be on that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames, I've trying to see, like, what areas do I hear the most about from farmers going into that, or what are the concerns and why we do things that way. So what I've tried to do is spend a lot of time with my assistant and my deputy and my assistants getting up speed, but also working with our division directors and meeting with them to really drill down. And I've been having half-hour meetings with a lot of the different employees over there, but really could have two-hour meetings with them because I have a lot of questions. And some of the areas that rise to the top and that we'll be looking at, and not necessarily that we're doing it wrong, or but maybe we could do it a little better, are our inspections and whether it's dairy inspection or processing. And I think, too, it's a lot of communication and expectations. And so I do look forward to how we deliver government. As I try to look at it as I'm not an active farmer. I live on a farmstead. I always say, too, when it comes to, like, water quality issues, my well, I walked it off the other day, is 138 feet from a cornfield. So when we talk about water issues and things like that, I look at how these programs impact a farmer. So if we're saying, we're going to inspect this, or we're going to say you can't spray that, it may be all well and good, but I think we need to do a better job explaining to the farmers what is expected of them, and also understanding what's expected of them. So it's kind of early in the process yet, but it's something that I'm trying to look at it from that angle as well.
Mm-hmm. Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Peterson, congratulations. A couple of years that I've been up here, it's been great to work with you, and I look forward to working with you going forward. But one area that I hear from farmers quite a bit is the department's been more like an adversary to the farmers rather than being collaborative and helpful to them. And I guess my question is, what are you going to do to try to alleviate that perception that some of the farmers have with the Department of Ag and get it to where we're helping our farmers versus coming down with a hammer and hitting them over the head all the time is what I hear from a lot of farmers. So,
yep, Mr. Chairman and Senator Goggin, again, I appreciate working with you on several bills too as we've gone through and started this. And again, it might be a little different, in the fact that I live in Pine City, which is I'm surrounded by my best friends are farmers, my cousins, everybody that lives around me depends on agriculture. When I go to my bank, my banker wants to talk to me about what's happening in our community. When I go to the sale barn, which is 2 miles from my farm, I stop there on Mondays or Wednesdays or Saturdays at the sales. I go to the feed mill on Saturday mornings. I get that firsthand, which I think is a little different. And so I kind of take that to heart, and I expect people to call people back in a timely manner, that they give them answers as soon as possible, because I think those are some of the things that I hear about. I want to be an advocate for farmers, and so what I'm kind of getting at is that, I want to look at what I was kind of saying to Senator Dames is how we deliver our product, and are we advocating for farmers within the agency? Our mission is tricky. It's to, basically improve the life of farmers and do it in a way that we're protecting the environment. And those are issues that have come about a lot. And I think a lot about the buffer law and the nitrogen rule and a lot of these programs. At the end of the day, they're probably things that can work for most farmers. But it's how we get there and how we deliver and how we communicate it is something that we can improve upon. And that's something that I look forward to working on.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for my voice, if there is one. So congratulations. Give me a little idea about the numbers you gave us on dairy. There are 11,000 dairies, now there's 2,700. I know we just lost one up on the Iron Range. It wasn't a big one. It was about 160 cows, but I know there were problems with Wisconsin, there were problems with the relationship with Canada, the hormone-free milk was all this stuff entered into losing that particular dairy. But is that what the reason we're losing dairies, or are bigger conglomerates taking over the dairies? So if you can, compare the number of cows that we have now to the number of cows we used to have, or maybe even, this is a better number, the production of milk that we have now compared to the production of milk we used to have. And I don't know if you know those or not, but it's just an idea of what's been going on in the dairy industry here.
Commissioner?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, a couple of things on that. So our cow numbers are very similar, you know, for when we had 11,000 dairy farms to where we have our average herd size, and I used to keep that chart too, and I didn't look, but you know, we're north of 125 on our average herd. We may even be closer to 150 now. Back then, when I started, it was about 50 was the average, and so that's been increasing. And we definitely have seen a trend of larger dairies, especially in western Minnesota. And I do, look forward to visiting with the dairy industry to understand that impact more, because I hear a lot of oversupply questions, but then I hear that we don't have enough and we need more processing capacity in Minnesota. In our area, I live in Pine County and north into St. Louis County, the problem has been we're far away from processing. And so the farmers in your district or your area, they face the issues I've been working on with them are the hauling costs that really cripple those farmers and will continue to do that. And so trying to look at that too to see how do we address that hauling cost is something that's been really hard in our area in northeast Minnesota. So, you know, I don't have the answers on that, but it's something that we're starting to do meetings on and trying to understand how that we can add value or how we can help produce, use that product. The new farm bill is something that I worked on with Farmers Union, has an improved dairy program that I think is going to help a lot of our farmers that are, say, under 250 cows. And it's just going to be a bridge of getting them into that. There's also a new insurance program. So there are new tools for dairy farmers. It's just a question of if it's going to be enough to help them, or is it not? Is it too late for some? But we'll see how it plays out.
Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Peterson. We're really happy that you're in the position now of leading the Department of Agriculture here. You did outstanding work for the farmers and Farmers Union, representing them here, and really enjoyed working with you over the years, and I look forward to working with you in the future in your capacity as commissioner, and I think you've been well prepared for that position. So one issue you brought up that I think has lots of potential here, especially, and that's the issue of hemp production here in Minnesota, especially now that it's been taken off the controlled substance list. There's a lot of opportunity in this area. I'd like to hear, I guess, what your thoughts are as far as how you think it's going to proceed, I guess what needs to be done in order to, you know, for us here in the legislature to help the expansion of that industry here. It's kind of coming at a good time since the farm economy has been struggling. Maybe this is something that can provide some assistance for farmers in our area. And I know there's a lot of different things that can be produced with hemp. What types of processing plants might be out there that may be looking to locate here in Minnesota, and what we can do to help facilitate that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Eakin, and again, thank you for your leadership over the years on that issue. And it's interesting to see, we always say there's interest in it, and we saw that last Friday, when I walked into that room and I saw all the different people there. And I'll say this because people always say, oh, it's the hippie farmers want to grow hemp, and everything. And that's, there's a few there, but there's a lot of, like, big corn and soybean folks from up in your area. And, you go to North West Minnesota, when we were looking at hemp, you know, they grow it just across the border in Canada, and that's what frustrated our farmers for many years, that we couldn't do it. They were growing it, processing it, and selling all the products into the United States. Well, now we have a chance to compete against them. The things that concern me is even in Canada, where they've been growing it for 20 years, they've had, we had folks down on Friday to present to it, was overproduction, you know, and so we end up, and our farmers have figured out how to grow it. So we have to have the processing and markets catch up quickly, especially if we're going to have hundreds of farmers growing it. And so there are farmers and people that are looking at that, and we're working to identify those pieces within the department, how we can be helpful. I'm excited about the companies that Senator Weber and I talked about this that want to do business here in Minnesota, and so we have to work with them. There's a lot of interest in the extraction of oil. You probably heard a lot about the CBD is something that we're working on and trying to look. That'll be one of the more controversial pieces that we'll need to get in and talk about. I also thank the legislature for investing, in a position at the department, and that is was one-time dollars. And so as we go forward in that, you know, I do make the pitch as we come forward that this is going to be something that we may need, you know, some help continuing to build on this. Because, again, we're going to be competing against, in your case, North Dakota, so the growers in Clay County. And they're going to be some of the bigger fields in that area. They're looking at that. And so I just think the amount of products and things that people want to present, but a lot of it does come with the oil and pressing. We have a great team at the department working on that. We have really good staff, and we look forward to working with the legislature on it.
Commissioner, would you say that in that issue that it's a question of purely of processing or of demand development? In other words, there being a substantial enough market for the finished product?
Yeah, that's a Mr. Chairman. That is a kind of all the above. You know, the products have started to come. You can see like hemp parts and pieces in Target, you know, or Walmart. You walk around, you can see like the different hemp products, and there's a lot of things being produced. I think the processing is. I'd like to see it here, you know, because I think the price point is going to be whether we're hauling it wherever, that if we can do some of the manufacturing here, I think is important. And that's kind of where the companies are going to look to set up, I think, in the next couple of years. So I think it's going to, the demand will grow with the products and the quality products, but I do see it growing. But I think that it's going to go hand in hand with the manufacturing as well and the marketing. You know, we have some real strong marketing folks in Minnesota that are, and hopefully, you know, suggest the committee maybe do a hemp look at that too, because I think there's some wonderful people that would be great to have you all listen to.
Thank you. Senator Hur.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment. I don't have any question to Commissioner Peterson at the moment, but first of all, congratulations, and your explanation to us are very, very thorough, and I just want to say a good word about Commissioner Peterson, being that he's a lobbyist in his background, and, you know, he's out and about a lot, you know, so he appeared to be very accessible to all of us, and I just want to say that out. And a few points that where he mentioned, you know, that make my role as a state senator of Eastside St. Paul relevance, even though I'm representing an urban core. Two things that's relevant is the emerging farmer that he mentioned, the opportunity there for hemp farming, and also the international relationship that we have with our client overseas. So those two are relevant that the commission have brought up. And I know that we're going to have committee later on to confirm, you know, his appointment, but I just thought I want to give a good message out for him at this point. So thank you for coming here, Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Senator Herr. And if there aren't any other, oh, Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I want to get my 2 cents in. 3 cents, I guess, the dame thinks it's worth. So, first of all, Commissioner Peterson, congratulations, and we've been able to have some constructive discussions and meetings already, and just in this hearing or setting, kind of our overall, just two questions, and I'll combine them into one question. But what would you lay out as some of the biggest opportunities we have in Minnesota agriculture? And secondly, just as the tone of your agency is getting set or reset, as you call it, and Governor Walz, and I think that's an appropriate optimistic way. I think we all need to look at elections and changes, but how do we ensure, how do you want to ensure your agency works with farmers rather than dictates to farmers as you go forward? If you could just address those two topics, that'd be great.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I really think the opportunities, you know, we have to keep pushing the envelope on value added, and the more that we can, you know, use our products here. But for the, you know, and I'm excited to be able to partner with the University of Minnesota, with AURI, you know, and doing meetings with them to see, you know, how can we have businesses and how can we use that product here? Because the closest we can keep our basis and have, add value to our farmers' products is first something that's a top priority. So trying to figure that out, and we do have good resources and efforts of that at the department. And also trade, I think, is I'm, you know, really intrigued by, you know, trade as, you know, such a growing and different dynamic, even in my time with Farmers Union, where even in your district, you see so many more farmers storing their own grain, controlling, trading. You know, that's a different marketplace too. As Senator Herr mentioned, that, you know, we're forced with China's situation to look at other markets in Southeast Asia, or Malaysia, Colombia, Peru. We have a lot of opportunities, and so I'm excited, you know, in trying to visit with Governor Walz about what those opportunities are. And again, with how we deliver our pieces to our farmers, I'm just trying to, as I get in and meet with our agencies and departments, that's my first question to them is, you know, it doesn't get much easier than just how do we deliver to our farmers. I'm gonna go home at night, and I'm gonna go to my kids' basketball game tonight, and I'm gonna sit with farmers, and they're gonna ask me, and they're gonna tell me, you know, why does this take so long, or why can't I plant this, or why do I have to wait until this time to do this? And I look at it, everything that way. That I think is really important. I hate to see. I believe in government. I think government, and that's the political philosophies of our parties, that I believe in the good of government, and I want it to work for people, not, you know, and it frustrates me, and you and I have worked on several issues where, you know, where it just is so cumbersome that we can't figure it out sometimes, that, you know, and I try to dig into those and how can we make it simpler, because at the end of the day, people are just trying to farm and get by, and they'll work with things, and if they can get some assistance or help in certain areas, that's helpful. But also, it's frustrating sometimes, and I see that firsthand, and I'm not afraid to jump in there and say, how can we do that better? And so I'll continue to do that as a commissioner and as much as I can.
Thank you. If there are no other questions on the part of the senators, Commissioner Peterson, I want to thank you for being here today. Again, congratulations on your appointment, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Next, we will turn to the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Jennifer Ho. Commissioner, we want to take this opportunity to welcome you here, and we will basically turn the testifier's table over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am very excited to be the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing and glad to have the opportunity to come today so that you could get to know me a little bit, but also so that I can get to know you. Looking forward to sitting down with you and understanding your specific priorities and the interactions that you've had with the agency that I have that I now run. When I was appointed for this job, I have friends all over the country, and some of them actually run other housing finance agencies. And I got texts and emails and phone calls, and everybody told me that I got a really good one. And so as I've been now, this is the beginning of my third week on the job, as I've been over at Minnesota Housing, it seems really clear to me that there are four things that make Minnesota Housing a really good one. One is our mission. You know, we give people homes and we help people preserve the homes they have. We have an incredible staff, and that goes deep and wide in the agency staff that are committed to the mission and who do good work. We have really strong operations. I'm grateful to all of the commissioners who preceded me, giving me an organization where, no, we don't do everything perfectly and we can do some things better, but we do a lot of things really well. But really, when I probed more about what's the thing that makes us stand out amongst our peers as being one of the best in the country, what I heard is that it's our relationship with you, with the legislature, that all housing finance agencies, you know, have some tools. There are state housing banks and you know, different authorities to do things. But the partnership that Minnesota Housing has enjoyed with the legislature for many decades allows us to do more. Do more in all corners of the state and do more for vulnerable and very low-income Minnesotans who otherwise wouldn't have their housing needs met. So I am looking forward to continuing that partnership, which means really understanding your priorities and helping me be a good commissioner to this committee as well. Just a little bit by way of background, I was born and raised in Fridley. My parents still live there in the home they bought just 2 weeks before I was born. I went to Fridley High School. I left for college. When I came back, I'm somewhat of an unlikely housing commissioner because my background is in healthcare. I worked at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota and then at United Healthcare, running Medicaid and Medicare programs. You know, a fair amount about housing finance or healthcare finance and healthcare policy. The way I got involved in housing is that one day when I was at Blue Cross Blue Shield, we were invited to a conversation about the intersection between homelessness, housing, and healthcare. And that was a really critical day for me because it ended up being a meeting that I went to that ended up changing the whole trajectory of my career. I went to and then left United Healthcare and ended up at a startup nonprofit called Hearth Connection. As the executive director of Hearth Connection from 1999 until I went to D.C. in 2010, I worked closely with the legislature, largely over in the Health and Human Services Committee, to create a funding stream for supportive services to make it more viable to do supportive housing and focus on ending long-term homelessness. Also at Hearth Connection, I had my first business interactions with Minnesota Housing. We became an agency that administered rental assistance. I did go to DC for 7 years. I worked 3 years at the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness and 4 years in the HUD Secretary's office, 2 years for Sean Donovan and 2 years for Julian Castro. Where I managed HUD's relationship with the Department of Health and Human Services, education, and others, really looking at the intersections between housing and health, housing and school stability and education, housing and aging in place, housing and individuals with disabilities living in integrated community settings. So my career really went from healthcare to being somebody who works at the intersections between housing and other things, and very much looking forward as the Commissioner of Housing to really deeply exploring this interconnectedness, but also how when we fail to address housing, it actually has cost and impacts in these other systems. So I certainly look forward to getting to know you. I think that the big picture thing I want to say is that it's so clear, I think now, really, all across the state that we need more housing. We need more housing that's affordable for people at all income levels and in every part of the state. And that what Minnesota Housing brings to that is that we're able to prioritize vulnerable and low-income populations that the private market on its own wouldn't necessarily be creating housing for. Housing is something that impacts everyone, everywhere, and everything that we do in our lives. And so I think it's an issue that really can enjoy a bipartisan approach, which I think is historically the way in which Minnesota Housing and the legislature have worked together on these issues. And with that, I just simply want to say I'm very excited to be here. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better and working together through this session and for the next 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions on the part of senators? Senator Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question as much as it is very happy to have you in the commissioner role and happy to have someone who has such an intimate background on such a large scale working tend and understand the impacts of homelessness and the way that works in terms of how it impacts healthcare. And so I am super excited to work with you and to be of service as we try to fix this problem that is so fixable if we had the political will to do so. So thank you for being here and taking the job.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome. Congratulations. Welcome aboard, and welcome back to Minnesota. D.C. is a nice place to visit. I want to live there. I spent 3 years there. So my question is, 1 in 5 people in Minnesota live with a disability. 1 in 10 is chronic. So you're looking at approximately 25% of the population is affected by some type of disability, right? There's the intersection with public health, Title V, public health, maternal child health, health and human services, outcomes for people, especially when you say most vulnerable. I would make the assumption that you're including the 25% of the population of the state of Minnesota that I just mentioned to you. But having made many assumptions in the past, you know what happens when you make assumptions. And with that, I would want to know what your plan is to, number one, integrate the discussion among the state agencies, because it shouldn't be a siloed approach. Disability should never be siloed, but rather integrated within all those disciplines that are there. Hence, take a lesson from the Federal Interagency Coordinating Council that is no longer in existence, but when it was, that was its charge, federal charge, which I served on from 2001 to 2004. So how are you going to integrate Section 42 housing discussion within that complex world and looking at the integrated piece, which we know your provider, you worked for United Health, correct? Mm-hmm. So Optum, which is a little arm of that, actually agrees with your assumption, and here's an assumption that we can look at and agree that stable housing is better outcomes, increases quality outcomes for people that are clients within the Optum circle. So they're looking at actually providing housing opportunities within their structure with clients. It's an amazing look, but it's a business decision, but it also makes sense. So I guess, number one, thank you for addressing that, and I would looking forward to working with you. Number two is the how do you see that interconnection, and how do you get the rest of those folks, including your boss, on the same page about the 25%?
Commissioner, before you proceed, I just want to congratulate Senator Hoffman for offering the longest question I've ever had in my committee. So, Commissioner, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'll note that brevity is valued, and Senator Hoffman, I look forward to having a long conversation with you one-on-one about these issues. I've worked at the intersection of housing and disability for a long time, some specifically on homelessness, where we see what happens when it all falls apart. But I was also the point person on Olmstead for HUD during my tenure at HUD, and worked very closely with the Center for Medicaid and the Department of Justice, going out to states that had Olmstead settlement agreements to help bridge conversations between people who managed HUD housing resources and the state agencies that were under court order or court ruling. I now am inheriting a sub-cabinet on Olmstead and disability during a period of time where we have the opportunity to complete our obligations to the court And on Monday, I'm chairing for the first time the Olmstead Subcabinet, which brings together the state agencies on this topic. I think the real opportunity, thinking about a four-year arc, is that there's what we minimally needed to do to get out from underneath the court's oversight. But that just is the tip of what we can do together in order to improve housing, employment, community living options for individuals with disabilities across the board. And so I'm looking forward to providing leadership and partnership with my agency colleagues to really figure out what can we do over and above what it is that we have to do to really understand what it is that we can do to improve the lives of Minnesotans with disabilities.
Senator Hoffman.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had this discussion about this interconnection between agencies and whether you call it an interagency coordinating council or whether you call it the Olmstead Plan, right? Mm-hmm. Which it took Minnesota, I believe, 18 years since the Supreme Court decision was 1999, correct? And so it took us 18 years, and it took a federal judge to say, look, Minnesota, you need to do this, right? So we're doing this. And the question is, do you see yourself as that pivotal role to make sure that the Department of Education, who has an obligation within Olmstead, just like they do under the Individuals with Disability Education Act and transition services for those folks going into CADI, CAC, any of those waivered service programs. So do you see yourself as that liaison, that connector to make sure that, again, the 25% of the population is not set to the side and that it's become a priority for us to do what is core government? Those are core government services to make sure the most vulnerable in the state do have what is coming and needed for them. So do you see that you're going to be that connected, that liaison?
Mr. Chair and Senator, there are a lot of things that I will need to learn a lot about in my new role, but what I bring to the job is a history of working at the connections in between and providing leadership in that space. And very much I'm looking forward to, we had a retreat the Saturday before we began. I had an opportunity to meet my new colleagues in the cabinet, and there's a lot of energy about working together. It was really striking to me as I had an opportunity to get to know each of them over the course of that day, that there's actually intersections between Minnesota Housing and every other cabinet agency. But yes, I think I don't talk in acronyms. I don't think in silos. And so the opportunity to really find where the common ground is, recognizing that different colleagues at different agencies have problems that they conceptualize through their own frame, but oftentimes it is how housing and education work together on school stability for kids. It's how housing and the Department of Human Services can work together to make sure that individuals with disabilities are living in the most integrated setting and that they're not sleeping outside or in shelter. Figuring that out together is where the majority of the experience that I bring confidently into this job lies, and I am looking forward to working across agencies to see how we can press that.
Commissioner, we haven't had an opportunity to visit a great deal yet, but in brief comments we had prior to the hearing today, I made some comments about my concern about affordability and what have you. And I certainly don't intend, you start being in your third week on the job, to give me an idea of how you can affect that. But has your work, have you dealt with that issue? Sometimes what we in government classify as affordable out in the real world isn't so affordable, and I'm just wondering if you've had experience with those kind of issues.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am looking forward to get to know each other well and to know the issues specific to your districts as well. But, to me, housing affordability is really about two things. How much does your housing cost, and how much do you make, and can you afford to pay for it? And we have lots of technical federal terms that we use to describe that, but the truth of the matter is that wages aren't keeping up with the rising cost of housing, and we need to figure out how to attack that from multiple perspectives. I appreciate the pass you're giving me on the first day of the third week on the job. These are very complicated issues, and there are very many important partners that I have been talking about from the day of the announcement of my appointment about the different interests in this. But I really do believe that housing, the idea of home, is a universal connection point. We all know what it feels like to be able to go home at night. And for those of you who spend a big chunk of the year not being able to go home at night, having alternate homes, we know the toll it takes when we're too far away from home for too long. I certainly felt that really clearly when I had two homes when I was working in D.C., and I certainly had sticker shock when I had to rent in the D.C. housing market. Not only is it what housing costs, but it's what workers make. And, you know, the people who build the homes should be able to afford to rent them. The people who are providing care in people's homes should be able to afford their own home. And that's something that's going to take a lot of strategies to figure out. And I look forward to working with you to figure out how we can approach it from many angles.
Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was pretty much along the same line, so she's pretty much answered. Commissioner Jennifer Hull, congratulations. So I just thought, being that Sherry explained to some degree, I just want to, you know, give this time to congratulate her. And in my district, you know, we are facing housing shortage, so I'm sure we'll be working very closely together to find solutions. So welcome aboard.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you very much. My guess is that in all of your districts, there is some realization either of housing shortages or housing just not matching well to the needs of either people who are aging, people who have jobs, people who teach in schools, local police. So I look forward to talking with all of you about the housing needs in your district and around the state.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. And Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations, Commissioner. And to that point, One Minnesota, I might be wrong, but it seems to me that the housing money gets disproportionately spent in the metro area and rural Minnesota gets ignored a lot. And so I just want to make sure that that the issue of housing and how important it is just as important to the problems that we have in rural Minnesota as they do in the metro area, and I want to make sure that we get our fair share, and I just want to let you know that I'm concerned about that, okay?
Mr. Chair and Senator, you know, when I was at Hearth Connection, we had an opportunity to work all the way from the Canada border to the Iowa border, and I had an opportunity firsthand to see how housing needs look very different in different parts of the state. Obviously, I need to be brought up to date because I've been away from that for 9 years now, but I understand that one of the things that we can critically do at Minnesota Housing is that we can create incentives for people to develop in places that they wouldn't naturally do it on their own, and in large part through many of the programs that we partner together to when you appropriate for us or when we do bonding. So there is an opportunity for us to work together to take a look at where the money is spent. I've seen a great map of the state of Minnesota and the places that we spend money. And I know that we do spend money in all parts of the state. But I think the question is, are we meeting the need in places that need it? And my attention to Greater Minnesota and the governor's attention to One Minnesota, I promise that this will be something that we pay very close attention to.
If there are no further questions, Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner Ho, congratulations on your appointment as well. I look forward to getting to know you better and better and work with you on housing and finance issues. Just if you could address how do we bring the cost of affordable housing down what would you propose or what would be ways you could see that we try to bring down the cost of housing per square foot? And coupled with that, how or where do you see manufactured housing or modular housing being a part of that type of solution?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you for that question. Obviously, this is going to be one of the great challenges that we have working together. There are many factors that impact this. The price of land, the cost of construction, the cost of labor, timeliness, local decision-making, permitting and fees. One of the things that I've asked my team to think about is how do we begin to dissect where it's kind of regulatory, where is it process and timeliness, and where is it pure cost? Also know that there are a lot of decisions that we make in how we build and who we build for that also raises the price of housing. We live in larger homes with smaller family units than we did decades ago, and so our lifestyle preferences also drive up housing costs. And I do think that there's an opportunity to explore a whole new technology. You know, we build houses largely the same way that we built houses a while ago, and we live in a completely different technological world where we can 3D print a house. And so how are we even thinking about that? I will not even begin to pretend that this is an area of great expertise, but it's an area of great interest. And I'm looking forward to working with folks that have thought much longer and have worked hard on this issue to understand where how we create homes can also help us lower the cost of homes.
To that, Mr. Chair, follow.
Yes, Senator.
And, thank you, Commissioner. And to that end, how do you propose or would you work with stakeholders to convene and to bring these ideas to the forefront or to bear to help challenge what maybe has been done for 10 or 20 or 50 years in your agency or maybe the way we've done it around the legislature? But I think you make some good points. There's technological change. There's other changes. How do you propose bringing those stakeholders together and then never stop asking what if you can address that a little bit further.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I mean, I know that a lot of what I need to do right now is listen and learn, and listen and learn not only to the folks who maybe historically have had direct access to the commissioner's office, but also listen and learn and find folks who haven't always felt like they had that direct path. I think the question... The problem of housing affordability has become so widespread in all corners of the state for people at every income level that we need solutions that are bigger than incremental adds to the way that we have historically done things. I come to this job humble that I do not know all of those answers, but I know that our aspirations need to be very large. I've spent a lot of time in the last 8 years in Seattle and Portland and San Francisco and Honolulu and Los Angeles and Denver, and I have seen what happens when you don't get it right. And I think that we have a real benefit of not being any of those places to kind of have a pretty clear picture of where we don't want to go in terms of housing that's affordable to people at all income levels. So I am looking for partners who are going to come in not only with new ideas but big ideas, because I just don't think that we can get ahead of this if all we do is think incrementally about how to do a little bit more of what we always did. And I look forward to exploring those ideas with you both in committee but also one-on-one.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Commissioner Ho. Just to your answer, what do you say? You've been to those cities, and you know what it looks like when they don't get it right. Can you expand on that? What is it that you've seen that they maybe haven't gotten it right, or what is maybe some of the issues that's resulted from what they've done, and what was it that they did or didn't do right?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think you all know that my background is in homelessness in these West Coast cities. They maybe have economies that we envy, but they've also have homeless encampments that make the one that we have recently been confronting pale in comparison. They have built, but they've built largely to a higher income level IT jobs. And so you have people who can no longer afford to live in the community where they're a cop or a teacher or a nurse, and people being pushed further and further out, which then creates congestion and traffic issues because people have long commutes to get back to where they work. And many of these communities, I think of Seattle and Portland and San Francisco specifically, where they have land issues, they're contained by natural barriers, you know, they're running out of land even if they decided that they were going to begin to correct for what they didn't adequately anticipate decades ago. And so making sure that when we are thinking about how to solve the problem of housing that's affordable, that we take seriously the part that's for people at all income levels and really appreciate that that could be, my father's in the hospital right now. And, you know, I just spent the whole weekend thinking about whether or not he can go home safely in the home that my parents have lived in since 1965. This is a universal issue. You know, this is about younger people who want to get into the home ownership market for the first time. Can they afford to get in? Can they afford to get in given the amount of debt that they have on their student loans? This is about employers who are having to bus in employees because employees can't afford to live near the businesses where they can work. So, I mean, there's as many, many angles on this, and I just, I mean, I'm looking forward to exploring these more deeply with you, but these are big challenges, and they're big challenges that impact all Minnesotans all across the state at all income levels at all ages, And I think that enough of what's happening with demographic trends, enough of what we've seen in communities that haven't gotten right, and to signal what it is that we need to pay attention to so that we don't look in the rearview mirror and find out that we made some of these same mistakes.
If there's no one else, I'd just like to say, again, congratulations, Commissioner. We thank you for coming. We thank you for the information, and we all look forward to meeting with you further here in the very near future.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to just come in. I know most of you didn't know who I was, and the opportunity just to introduce myself and to begin to explore these issues. I'm very much looking forward to working with you this session and in the years ahead.
Thank you very much. With that, committee members, our next hearing will be Tuesday, January 29th at 3 p.m. in this room. With that, this meeting is hereby adjourned.